This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
This is Spike Lee, and the Michael K. Show starts now. 98.7 ESPN.
Thank you, Spike, and a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Wednesday, March 31st, 2021. Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4.5 hours.
Right.
And the other 19 and a half, well, that is your responsibility.
Good math.
Yeah, it's unbelievable how now that has become the thing. And, you know, somebody said it on Twitter yesterday, that's why I like these guys. They only give me 19 and a half hours of responsibility. I can't handle more. So it used to be 20, now it's 19 and a half. And who knows what the future holds? This could end up being a 7-hour show. You never know.
That's a great point by you.
You never know.
Let's be honest. Can I just say it?
Say
you
it.
Really wanted to win. 6A to 7P.
6A to 7P.
The whole day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I would.
I think we could do it.
I mean, I'd like to do that. Listen, one of the reasons that I have the Comrex, to put you behind the curtain a little bit, the unit that we're using here, that I'm using, and we all have,
the big
work
unit
from home. I've had this in my house for 10 years. And the reason I had it was given to me back in 2011, the summer of 2011, because we were going to do 24 hours of Don to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the station since I was the first voice. It never materialized. But I was really anxious to do that. I'd love to do that one day. Never materialized because they're like, okay, but when we have network programming, you can't be on. I'm like, well, then that's not 24 hours of Don, is it?
See, Peter, the fact that he wants to do 24 hours of Don, is does it fall under the heading of least surprising things of all time?
It's not shocking.
It's not shocking.
You wouldn't
at all
want to do 24 hours of people, like one time do 24 hours of straight radio. I did it in college. It was cool.
It would
you just love the air. That's what we're saying.
I'm trying to think,
ripping you.
I would have to, Don, for I think at this point, the amount of radio I do, for that to be fun, it would have to be leading into something awesome, or we'd have to have a theme or guest.
Oh, no,
something.
Of course. Well, first of all, it'd be for charity, right?
That's
where
a start.
We would get, let's say we did something for like Make-A-Wish or Ronald McDonald House or something like that, where, you know, people could donate through the 24 hours. You get all the different local teams involved so that they could pepper us, you know, with guests, so that you, because you do it by yourself, you know, you're going to need breaks.
Can we do
you're
some
gonna
cocaine?
Need to be able to interview people. So that was my thought.
He ignored that.
I didn't hear him. What did he say?
He said, can we do some cocaina? That's what he said.
Listen, do what you got to do. I mean, I'm assuming that's how you get through your day now.
Don doesn't need it, though, because Don gets high on airtime. If he's feeling down during commercial, he knows he's going to be on the air again, and boom, he's jacked.
Michael, do you need some cocaine? Do we have to be worried about you?
Well, I'm glad you bring that up.
This is epic. This is, okay. I didn't want to go there for the open.
No, you have to.
But yeah. It is.
You got to get it out of the way.
Openable.
It's like if you wake up with a huge pimple on your nose, you got to get out there and show everybody the pimple, let them make fun of it, and then get on with your day.
Right, because it's not an ordinary pimple. It's like a record break. It's a goiter.
It's a goiter with pus coming out of it. That's what we're about to share with you right now. And I'm the one who told the guys, yeah. I want the best defense is a great offense.
That's class out of you. Seriously.
Well, let me set it up. So, Ryan Hurley, because this is going to be a baseball, you know, our baseball preview show, because unfortunately, Don and Peter will be on tomorrow from 2 to 6:30, but I'll join after the Yankee game because the Yankee game's at 1 o'clock opening day at the stadium. Met game's at 6 o'clock in Nationals Park against Washington. So, the initial plan was to have me on with Greeny tomorrow. And then KJZ asked if I could be on with them. And I said, yeah, I'll do that. And so that was going to be at 8:10, and Greeny was going to be at 10:30. Then the executives, who, you know, that big, fat, bulbous hands, they said, oh, it's not good to have them on two shows, you know, the same day. So let's split it up. So what they did was they put me on Greeny today, and tomorrow I'll be on KJZ.
Oh, no.
So Greeny, I had a good talk. It was good. It was informative. I was pithy. I was funny. I was me. You know, I was a good guest.
The caster.
I was a caster. That's
right.
I was.
You were the caster, right?
And Then something happened that I wish I could tell you what happened. I don't know if something happened in my mind. The wiring got clipped. Greeny said goodbye, and all I had to do was say goodbye. And I couldn't pull it off. So why don't we listen?
Wow.
Because it is in a word. I mean, the phrase, it's in a word, troubling. It's about this. Here it is, the ending to my interview with Greeny.
Thank you, my friend, and I will see you soon. Say hi to everybody.
Be well. You say hello, too.
Okay. Take care, Michael. It's Michael Kay with me here.
Now, that almost leads you to remember this.
All right, Von Don. Hope it's happened to you.
It's almost that.
Well, no, it reminds me of Don's reply to that.
Right. That's what I was thinking.
That's real well.
Now, I brought that up to Andrew because we were talking about it off the air, because I really was proud of you that you alerted us. But then I went to Twitter, and then I was alerted by many people that this happened.
It's terrible.
And I thought
so
to myself, because that's exactly how I responded to LT. And I was talking to Andrew, and I said, well, that's the same thing. And Andrew's like, no. At least you had the excuse of having to respond to gibberish.
Right.
Greeny was perfectly coherent.
Perfectly coherent. A beautiful goodbye. All I had to do was say goodbye. And this is what came out. I guess my...
Be well. You say hello, too.
Oh. What is that?
I don't want to laugh. I feel bad. Like,
are you okay?
Oh, man.
I mean, I can't make fun of anything like this, but I walked out of where I, you know, the office where I do it in my home, and I said to Jody, I said, I might have just had a stroke on the air. My mouth wouldn't work. Nothing came. I mean, that's pathetic. That's almost a fireable offense.
It does happen.
No, not to me.
I know it doesn't happen to you, Michael, because you're just
great,
unbelievably talented. But to us commoners,
all he said is,
it does happen.
Say hello to everyone. Be well, my friend.
And I should have said, thank you, Greeny. I'll talk to you soon.
And you said,
Be well. You say hello too.
No, it's doing real well.
Oh man, it just
I don't know how I get up from this. I really
there
don't.
Is something I don't know if you feel it, Peter, that makes you feel good. Just like, you know what, it's okay, because even the great ones stumble.
Yeah, but maybe we're all bad. Maybe none of us are great.
But the thing that makes me feel good that I never really have declared on the air like, Peter, I'm the greatest broadcaster of all time.
No, you've never done that.
No.
And that just proved that I'm not.
Now, but my question is, does this ever happen to Greeny or Costas?
No, I'm not at their level. I'm not at their level. I mean, I never claimed to be at their level.
It had to have happened to them.
No, there's no way that ever happened to Costas, ever.
Did Greeny reach out after?
Well, you know what I said to Greeny? I texted him immediately. I said, I'm really sorry. The wiring just went wrong there.
Haywire.
He never answered back.
Oh,
it's like
no.
He's disowned me. He wants nothing to do with it. I don't think I'll ever be on that show again. Andrew, get Greeny on the air.
I want to know if it's happened to the truly, like, that level.
Andrew, get Greeny right now. Get Greeny right now. And was he troubled when it happened? Is there a reason he didn't answer back my text?
Now, I'd be curious to know if it's ever happened to him.
No. Maybe,
but
you
let's
know,
do
in
a,
the infancy of his career, maybe?
Let's do a baseball preview show and also try to get in touch with the greats and see if it's ever happened to them. Well, I'm definitely going to ask Gary when we have him on at 5:30, Gary Cohen, if it's ever happened to him, because he is among the greats. I don't think Buck cares. He's coming on at 3. But let's get Costas on. Let's get Nance on.
Oh, yeah, Nance is coming on after what you agreed with Marchand about, sure.
Hello, I heard once he tried to go for Hello Friends, and he just went, Hello.
But of the people that we know, right? Well, Gary's going to be on.
That's never happened to Breen. There's no way.
We can ever ask Costas, Breen.
He tried for the bang.
And Buck. Yeah. Buck. And see if it's ever happened. Play it for him, and then ask them if that's ever happened to him. And that'll make you feel better if you find out that you go 4-for-4, that all those guys had that moment.
You say hello to
him. Look at that. I shouldn't be allowed near a mic. I walked out of my office with my head down. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed for my children. I mean, imagine if they were old enough that their classmates would say your father just drooled all over himself on the air.
And you could have done the spot, like, you could have done the sports equivalent to curing cancer during that interview.
And this
if you
is what
closed it out that way, it would have killed you.
Imagine if I finished the Jeter 3000 call like that.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Those are career killers. I being a guest on Greeny.
See, why can't you look at it that way?
Right. Be grateful.
You know, the Jeter 3000, the Jeter's last hit, right?
The Martinez Grand Slam.
Home run. Like, all those moments that you had that are great, amazing, thrilling moments, it could happen then. You'd rather it happen, no offense to Greeny, at the end of an interview, a spot in the middle of the day on some random Wednesday in March. That's a fair trade, right, Peter?
Listen, it's so much better in that spot than some critical moment. You got to be okay with it. I mean, because are you thinking about it more? You know, when you're doing your stand-up at the beginning of a Yankees game, while you're used to it and it's what you do, you're probably very focused. Right. On what you're going to do, exactly where you're going, boom, boom, boom. When you're
more
wrapping,
focused than goodbye,
and when you're wrapping up on a hit on another show in your house on your Comrex, you're not as focused. So you,
but if you listen to the whole interview, I mean, I was in a word brilliant. I mean, right. I made cogent points, intelligent avenues I went down to get to my points, and then I can't say goodbye.
Let me hear. Maybe we're missing it. Maybe there was brilliance. Can we hear the whole thing with Greeny one more time?
Thank you, my friend, and I will see you soon. Say hi to everybody.
All right, be well. You say hello, too.
Okay, take care, Michael. It's Michael Kay with me here.
Poor Greeny. No. Poor
You're
Greeny.
You're a blithering idiot.
He took a shot to the head.
Poor Greeny. It's like he saw somebody stumble and fall on their face in front of him, and he didn't know what to do.
I've seen guys get up after UFC fights in which they just had their brains right. beaten in. And they made more sense.
Right. Well, interviews from a gurney into an ambulance.
Whenever, I always have this joke about Jody, like the last thing I'll ever see, I'll be in a hospital bed, some hospice, whatever, really, really ill and dying. And she'll be making jokes because she doesn't know how to be. She just doesn't know how to like be compassionate in that way. Like if I'm sick, she'll make a joke rather than say I'm really sorry. So I told her what happened, and she looked up from her computer, and she starts singing, "Never can say goodbye."
Oh, wow.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. I said, thanks. Thanks, Jody.
That's, you're not going to get much there.
No, you're not getting compassion from Jody. She doesn't play compassion. Never has.
You know, 3,000 with an exclamation point, if that happens, you'd be devastated. You know, Yankee Stadium up for grabs. Forget it. Yankees up. Grabs.
Can you imagine the LT thing. Can you imagine if you did that when the Stanley Cup game you called?
No, it's doing well.
The only thing that could have made it better was maybe like a belch or flatulence at the end.
That would have been perfect because I would have had an excuse for sounding like that. There's no excuse for this. I really thought about taking the rest of the week off as a punishment.
Don, you said it's like an interview from the gurney to the ambulance. It's as if they're backing up the gurney, and it's one of those terrible moments where the person, falls off on their way into the ambulance.
It's the Mike Modano moment. Mike Modano got hit at Madison Square Garden. MSG had the cameras. They're putting him into the ambulance, and they dropped him. Mike Modano follows me on Twitter.
Adam Michelin on Twitter goes, "Can we redo Drop Madness immediately? The vocal stumble is the best drop ever."
We've had at least four drops during Drop Madness that we will have in 2022.
B. Dilly goes, "This Greeny thing is like Kay dominating the Iowa caucus to begin his campaign for next year's Drop Madness." David Van Benshotten goes, "Thank you for making a crappy 24 hours so much better. That made me laugh about as hard as I've laughed in a good long time." Steve Brzezinski goes, "Kaster signing off the Greeny is a sign the end is near of a great radio run."
I think it's the sign of the exact opposite. I think it gets me hyped. It makes me feel like we're really getting into our zone now for this 2 o'clock show. Don, don't you think that's what we need?
No, absolutely.
That's what we needed. And someone made a great observation, and you guys may still disagree with this because I know you're very upset about the results of Drop Madness yesterday.
Yeah, we have to address that too.
And the fact that Stench from Amerenek knocked off Sniff 'em Dead. And Don, you may still fight this because I know how you really felt, but I got a tweet, and I wish I could remember the person's name, but it was a while back, the last night. I won't be able to find it. And he said, Sniff 'em Dead will be the better pro, but Stench from a Marinic was the better tournament player. And that, to me, is right. Sniff 'em Dead lives on forever, but this was Stench from a Marinic's year, you know? Hell of a tournament.
Andrew, I'd like to bring you into this because you are kind of the commissioner of the whole thing. Well, we rushed off the air because we were lucky enough to get Michael Rappaport on. And the last thing we hear is that, you know, Stench wins. But you actually say, if you look at the voting, it's 50-50. So what's the exact voting? Do you know?
So I don't have access to the exact number vote. All we can go off of is if you log on to Twitter yourself and you look at the actual poll, you'll see Sniff 'em Dead is lit up gray and Stench and Mamaroneck, the four seed, is blue. And the winner, so whichever one has technically more votes, is lit up in that blue highlighted color. That is technically the one that has more votes. It just must have been such a marginal percentage difference that they just still have it listed as 50-50.
But there are so many people, Don, that are so angry and don't even want to. I for one, will never call the winner of Drop Madness the champion. I will never, ever admit that that's the drop that won.
Why though? I don't understand that.
Because I don't. I think there was a fallacy in the counting. I think the fix was in. I think it's ridiculous. You stole it. Wait, because everybody was so angry. Peter was so angry that Stench could lose. The Don drop is the best drop he's ever had.
This is
until I ended Greeny's show today.
This is you. But now you're just redoing history. This isn't right. It was up 5 points. Then you went on a campaign to change it, and then you let me have
but
an opportunity.
But you act like that's a bad thing when you were campaigning for it.
That's fine. But then I responded to your campaign, and in the end, we both campaigned, and Stench won. And Stench was up from the beginning when there was no campaigning. Andrew, wouldn't you agree the right drop won?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, like Peter kind of made the definitive point. It was winning without any campaigning on either side. So I think that's most telling of what direction this was headed.
Now, wasn't there a time, Peter, where you were able to get the exact percentages, or did you just make them up one time?
No, I always see them. It'll say 51.6, whatever. This one said 50-50.
So yeah, how do you give something 50-50?
Well, here's the thing.
Is there a hanging chad somewhere?
Well,
what's going on?
It can't be 50-50 because it was an odd number of votes. So, obviously, Twitter gave Stench the win because if there was an even amount of votes, then that technically could be 50-50. But, obviously, there had to be the one odd vote to go to either of the two, so it must have given the blue streak to Stench.
No. Stench had more votes. It just rounded to 50-50.
It smells from high heaven to me. I think I'm going to be having a press conference downtown in Manhattan at the Four Seasons today, and we'll talk about this.
Wait,
I think
the Four Seasons Hotel?
Yeah, the hotel.
Okay, just
this
make it
the
sure.
Hotel.
All right.
Now people on Twitter are taking this to an extreme, the Greeny thing. They're recreating some of my calls in this kind of fashion. Jonathan Goldberg goes, the David Justice home run call, get your tokens ready for subway train thing.
That's what
T-Man
that's
fan 181 said that was a Wash Handy moment.
It was way worse than Wash Handy. It makes Wash Handy sound like Shakespeare.
Please stay safe, everybody. Stay indoors. Be very Wash Handy.
Be well. You'd say hello
with that punctuation mark.
Oh no!
Did you have any question or doubt? Jeter does it.
People are just posting pictures of Kevin from The Office. I mean, that's not good. This is not good.
It's awful. Let's hear it again, Anthony, because I think it deserves to live.
All right, be well. You say hello to.
Oh, my goodness.
What now? Greeny didn't say anything right after, though.
He did. He felt sorry. Play that the whole thing.
I gotta hear this.
Yeah.
Thank you, my friend, and I will see you soon. Say hi to everybody. All right, be well. You say hello to. Okay, take care, Michael. It's Michael K with me here.
Okay. He said, okay, let's get this loser off the air. That's what he said.
Well, we got to get him on. There had to be something swirling in his head after that.
Oh, yeah, but I bet you that when they went to break, Don, everybody sitting there roaring, laughing. Could you believe that oaf? I mean, they were talking about it. There's no way you ignore that.
Well, staff was cutting it up. That's what they were doing. Because they're going to use it as a drop.
Nah, that would offend me. We can use it as a drop. I can make fun of myself. When other people do, then that's going to be problematic.
Well, I got to hear from Greeny.
I'm just glad that I brought it up, because I would be mortified that if I thought, you know, it had slipped into the ether and then all of a sudden Don and Peter played it.
No, this was classic get out in front of it. You need to get out in front of this one. For sure. And you did.
I never thought any drop would live in infamy the way the LT drop lives. But now I'm there.
Well, it took 15
years. I've
reached
that loser category.
It took 15 years.
I mean, you had so many things against you. You were on the side of a road. Is that what you actually...
Well, that's where it aired.
Oh.
I did it in studio. It was recorded. So it did have a chance to be edited out and wasn't. And then I aired it on the side of the road.
Andrew, I think that you need to get Jack Dorsey on the air, the CEO of Twitter. I mean, we've got to get to the bottom of this counting situation.
Oh my God. We need to ESPN needs to release this as an NFT. This could be sell for millions for charity. Imagine owning it. The person who gets to own this beautiful piece of art.
I'd be well. You say hello to
for the charity would be speech therapy for me.
That would be nice.
All right, we've got to reset. This was an unfortunate way to start the show, but we felt that we had to.
But the right way.
It probably was the right way. It's our big baseball preview show, so what we did was highlight me with an inability to speak on the air. Now, I wonder if this is going to give me the verbal yips.
No.
No, it could.
No,
it hasn't so far.
Opening day tomorrow. I'm going to try to say something. It's not going to come out. It's awful. I can't take my mind off of it anymore. It's done.
What if like tomorrow
what a career
start,
I had.
What if you start the game tomorrow and you just get some weird hiccup and you can only call him Aaron George? And no matter what people try to tell you, here he is, number 99, Aaron George. And it's permanent.
If I call him Aaron George?
Yeah, and you can't escape it.
I always thought that was going to happen if for some strange reason the Yankees' biggest prospect and the next superstar was George Hawthorne.
Oh
no.
Jennifer Hart goes, Michael, that's troubling, not just in a word. It just is.
Right. You don't need a word.
No, that's troubling. All right, I'll towel off. And shower off. Don and Peter will just towel off. We got a lot of stuff to do. A big baseball preview show. Buck Showalter's at 3. The TV voice of the New York Mets, Gary Cohen, is at 5:30. Drop Madness is at 4:20, where Peter could steal another election. 1-800-919-3776. Off to a great start. The K Show on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
All right. Baseball season starts tomorrow. A quick reminder, George Springer, the big free agent signing by the Toronto Blue Jays, is out. And, you know, when we did the game together, you know, it said that Springer had an oblique problem, and they said he was only going to be out a couple of days. I've been around too long that oblique and calf, don't ever think it's going to be a couple of days. It's always much longer. They said that Springer might be able to play the opening series against the Yankees. I didn't think there was a chance, so they put him on the IL. Of course they put him on the IL. That's a serious injury. Consider when you swing the bat, you're putting all this pressure on your oblique. How are you possibly going to come back in a couple of days? And Robbie Ray, who fell down the steps carrying his son, hit his elbow. He's also starting on the IL. So, you know, people look at the Yankees. They're the only team that gets hurt. Luke Voit had surgery. Well, everybody gets hurt. Every team has something like this. The Blue Jays losing Springer, that's a big deal. That was a big part of what they did during the offseason.
It's a starting center fielder.
Yep.
And you're right. That was a week ago today we did the game. I can't believe a week has gone by already. And it seemed like, oh, it's no big deal. He'll be back. And now he's on He's on the IL. He's not going to start on opening day. Now, it's a long season. Let's not get crazy. But still, I mean, you want to get off to a good start, especially when you're a team like the Blue Jays where you're already facing a lot of adversity anyway. You don't have a tremendous amount of pitching depth, so you really can't take a big bat away. And listen, your margin for error is slim. The Yankees are going to win this division. But that doesn't mean that you don't have a wild card. You got to contend with the Rays. You got to contend with the Blue Jays. You know, the Twins or the White Sox are going to win the Central, so one of those teams will be in the mix for the wild card. Many people are high on the Angels this year. So if the Astros are going to win the West, I mean, the Angels could still be very much in contention. I mean, do you really want to get off to a bad month and not be able to make up for it, already having to play in Dunedin, already having some pitching issues? No, I mean, that's a tough blow, man.
Well, I've got my picks. I've mapped them out, so I'll give them very quickly. In the American League East, I like the Yankees winning. In the Central, I like the White Sox winning. And in the West, I like the Astros winning. The Astros are better than you think. Now, I think that the A's will probably finish ahead of the Angels, but I don't think the A's or the Angels will get a wild card. My wild cards are going to be the Rays. I think they're just a better team than the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays have Hyunjin Ryu and a lot of question marks after that at starter. And I think the other wild card is going to be the Twins. So unless it changes before tomorrow, and it could with Major League Baseball, that's when we heard it last year, it's going to go back to the 2019 system. Two wild cards, they're going to be a one-game wild card game. That's it. So everybody's going to want to win their division to avoid that one-game scenario. So I think the wild card in the East is going to be the Rays. The other wild card is going to come out of the Central with the Twins. Do you guys have picks in the East or in the American League?
I have it the same way, Michael. I was kind of bouncing between the Twins and the White Sox. But I'm with you, especially with Buck told me that, you know, from a managerial standpoint, La Russa's age shouldn't be a problem. He can adjust. And so, yeah, I like that. I like that White Sox team a lot. And I think the Twins will get the wild card. I'm with you on that.
All right, so Peter, do you want to ring in?
I don't have anything to say about the Central, but I will say, wait, did you already give your East, Michael? You said
yes,
Yankees,
right? Yankees. Yep.
Yeah, and you said 103 wins. I lean the same way, but I do feel that within the first couple of months, we'll have an idea of whether they're still snake bitten, and if that's the case, I think it could be a lot tighter than Yankees fans hope.
I don't think it's gonna be a runaway. I mean, the Rays are just too good. The thing that plays against the Rays winning the division to me, I think they blew out their bullpen last year, and that's why they lost in the World Series. Their bullpen was just overloaded, and now Anderson's going to be out until midseason with a partial tear of the UCL. So I don't know if their bullpen's going to be as good, but that doesn't eliminate them because they know how to build a bullpen. They do, so we'll see. Now let's move to the National League East. Hmm. I have the Braves winning the East, although Pecota doesn't. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to sniff at Pecota. I still like the Braves. I think they're really good, and until proven otherwise, they're going to be the division champ. In the Central, I have the Cardinals winning. I think the addition of Arenado is huge. He's going to love playing there. They brought back Molina and Wainwright, so I think that's going to work out as well. In the National League West, the Dodgers win. Here are my wild cards, though. The Padres are going to get one of the wild cards. And in the National League East, the other wild card is going to be, I think, the Nationals. And I'm sorry, I think the Mets starting pitching is a little short, and their bullpen has a lot of question marks. I mean, you've got Dellin Betances throwing 91 miles an hour. Here's the Yankees, he threw 99 miles an hour. You don't know what you're going to get out of Familia. And Edwin Diaz, other than his last outing, had a great spring. But let's see how he is with fans in the stands again in New York. They're going to miss Lugo, and they're going to miss Carrasco for the first couple of months of the season, and obviously they can't wait to get back Syndergaard. So if they don't bury themselves in the first 2 months of the season, they could actually rise up and win the division because their offense is so good. But at this point, the way I see it, I'm going to have to leave them out of the playoffs. I'm going to have to say the Nationals will be better, and the Padres are one of the best teams in baseball, but unfortunately, they're in the division probably with the best team in baseball, the defending champs. So, again, Braves in the East, Cardinals in the Central, Dodgers in the West, Padres and the Nationals will be the wild cards.
Yeah, I'm with you in the Central with the Cardinals. I don't really think there's much competition there for them, and the Arenado move was huge for them. Padres are outstanding. I wouldn't be surprised if the Padres come close to winning 100 games and still finish in second because that's how good the Dodgers are, right? The Giants are in transition, Diamondbacks, Rockies, so they're going to be able to beat up on those teams quite a bit. although I do think the Giants will probably be third but not be able to compete for a wild card. Now, the East is interesting, Michael, because I think you could take at least those three teams and maybe even add the Phillies too. It's going to be very, very close. It really is. So the margin for error is so slim. And the Mets not being whole to start the year is going to kill them. I just have that feeling about it. I think the Nationals are winning the division. Because you look at the Nationals' rotation is outstanding, a little top-heavy, but still two great pitchers at the top. You know, Schwarber, you add to him. Soto is an amazing amazing player, one of the better players in all of Major League Baseball. And their bullpen, remember, they're the ones that got hand. You know, so I go Nationals, Braves, Mets, Phillies, and it might just be a separation of a couple of games. But you just can't ignore the Braves, right? I think if the Mets were whole to start, Carrasco's healthy, Syndergaard's healthy, then I think they'd really compete to win the division. But with a division that's so tight, and let's not, the Marlins are no pushover either now.
Right.
You know, you're not going to have, you know, go 18-1 against the Marlins. I mean, the Marlins have always been a thorn in the Mets' side, and especially now, they're not pushovers. They're not going to compete to go to the playoffs like they did last year, but they're going to be a tough team to have to face 19 times a year on top of having to face the Braves and the Nationals and the Phillies. So, yeah, I'll go Nationals-Braves, and I'll have Braves-Padres as my wild card team.
You seem intrigued by the East, Peter.
I think the East is – I think it's the most interesting division in baseball because we've been – I mean, and I don't know about the Phillies, and I'm sure Andrew could weigh in on what he feels, but I know he hasn't been uber confident. But if the Nationals get back to being who they are, and if Corbin's better than he was last year, because that was a seriously down year for him, because Don's right, it is a top-heavy rotation. But if they can have a third starter that's at least close to the level that they can be at, and then you have Juan Soto, who might assert himself as the best player in baseball. They're a really interesting team. And then the Braves have been a great team for the last couple of years. So Adon's right. The first couple of months, that time without Carrasco and Syndergaard, you wonder if that kills the Mets.
Now, the Mets get a little bit of a break. They don't need a break with Jacob DeGrom on the mound, but Britt Jaroli, who covers baseball for The Athletic and does a great job, that's just an aside, she's reporting the Nationals have a positive COVID-19 test. Their GM, Mike Rizzo, said they will certainly have to make some roster moves. Five people have been deemed close contact, so they open against the Mets tomorrow night on ESPN.
Well, that's the X factor in this whole thing, and we've seen it in the NBA and the NHL, how that could really derail things. And it's worse in baseball, because you saw what happened to the Cardinals last year when they were like 2 weeks behind everybody. You know, and, you know, I saw it with the NHL. Marchand missed two games because of a false positive, right?
Yep.
You had Montreal didn't play for a week because they had two players that had it, and plus all the contact. You know, the Rangers were okay because they were able to still play despite having two players that had it. But I've also seen, you know, the Devils were out for like 2 weeks, and they never recovered. It came back, and they were okay for a little bit, and they've never really recovered. Michael, if the Nationals, for some reason, have this be an issue for like the first week or so of the season and games have to be postponed and they're not whole, then that could change everything.
Yeah, they really could.
And so we're talking about, oh, the Dodgers are going to run away, the Padres are going to run away, you know, and all that might be great right now, but you get a few games postponed and mess things up. Like in the NHL and the NBA, you might be able to, you miss a couple of games. But you miss a week in Major League Baseball, that's at least six games that either have to be made up or whatever, and that could just completely derail your season. So, you know, take all of these predictions and just throw them away if COVID ends up being a problem for some of these teams. And for that happen to the Nationals right now, that could be big for a division where you really can't have any kind of margin for error. Those top four teams are all good.
When we come back, we will hear from Pete Alonso of the New York Mets. I think he's going to have a big year because he had a big spring training after struggling last year. Now, everybody said he had a terrible year last year, right? But if you extrapolate his season over 162, he would have ended up, I believe, at 38 home runs. Now, is it 52 or 53, which he had his rookie season? No. But 38 home runs ain't nothing to sniff at.
No.
So it wasn't as good a year, but he did not have a terrible year, and he played a lot better at the end. People have to remember they played a lot better at the end and seemed to really pick up right where he left off in spring training. So we'll hear from Pete Alonso in just a moment right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
Thank you, my friend, and I will see you soon. Say hi to everybody.
All right, be well. You say hello, too.
Okay, take care, Michael. It's Michael K. with me here.
We are going to be joined right now by the guy who had to suffer through what I did to his program, and that's Mike Greenberg. Mike, I will start off by saying I apologize. I don't know what happened. I thought I had a great segment up to that point.
I have done far, far worse. So I was hosting Mike and Mike. I was saying goodbye to a guest, Marcellus Wiley, and trying to throw to break. And your guess is as good as mine. What exactly it is that came out of my mouth.
Thank you, Marcellus.
Yes, sir, brother.
Mike and back with Just Smack and Moon Woman.
Feel better, Michael?
Well, I mean, yeah. If a great broadcaster like Mike Greenberg could mess up, but that seemed like it was in another language. I was messing up in English.
The Michael K. Show. On 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome back to the show. We've had a good time. Remember, we started 2. And remember, on Monday, we start giving out cash at 2 o'clock. 5 o'clock. 5 o'clock. $500 every 2 o'clock hour for the month of April.
Damn right.
So that, if you do the quick math, that is a cool
$10,000. $10,000.
And the first $2,500 coming from my wallet.
Not true.
That's a lie.
You have no idea if it's
not
a lie.
Every idea.
Maybe it is a lie, but you have no proof that it's a lie. None.
No, he knows you. That's the proof. He knows you.
I'm extraordinarily generous. Extraordinarily generous.
Here's the proof. There's no way from a legality standpoint that they would allow you to use your own money.
Oh, yeah, because they would never want me to dig into my pocket and give it back.
I know it's the 4 o'clock hour, and I know we're doing a lot of baseball today, but I feel like this bears mentioning before ENN.
Okay.
Did you see the letter from Deshaun Watson's attorney?
I did not.
So, Don, did you?
I did not.
This is Rusty Harden.
That name, by the way, is unfortunate.
Cousin is Rusty Nail. Thank you. I'm here all week for many years.
So... basically, he puts out a letter in which he talks about 18 massage therapists who all defend Deshaun Watson. Talk about how he's been nothing but professional. They have great working relationships with him. And all I could think about was, I don't think this helps you.
No, I agree.
Because now you're suggesting to me that there's a minimum of 40 different women that he's worked with, but with 18 of them, it happened to have gone well, and he didn't have any issues, or they weren't offended by what he did. The other ones were. But again, guys, that number, I would love to hear from a professional athlete. Does anybody work with that many massage therapists?
Well, anybody who did, they're not admitting it. They're not coming on the, oh, I have, because it seems unreasonable. It seems irresponsible. I mean, your body is your product. To have all these different people massaging, it doesn't make any sense. And isn't it odd that not one of them is a man?
Well, because obviously, I don't know how therapeutic these are. These aren't getting you ready for the game type massages. Otherwise, he would go to the team masseur or masseuse, which is the proper word for it, and get ready for the game. So this is obviously something that he enjoys, and he wants somebody of the opposite sex to do that. That's not against the law by any stretch. But when you're trying to prove your innocence, Peter's right. And there's at least 40 different people that have massaged you. So it's not even like I want the same person. Even if you're a regular, you're probably going to want the same person to do it. So to go through that many of them, I mean, that's crazy, right?
That's your best defense.
People.
Your best defense you can pull is going, well, look, there's another 20 who didn't have any problems with him.
Right. And that's assuming that we've now talked to everyone that has ever massaged him. That might be only half of the people. Who knows?
Oh, the number is going to be astounding. It says veteran massage therapists discuss working with Deshaun Watson. These women say they're deeply troubled by the accusations made against Deshaun, and that these claims are wholly inconsistent with their experiences with him, and who they believe him to be. All of them stated that Deshaun never made them feel uncomfortable or demanded anything outside the scope of a professional massage. Maybe it's true. Maybe in those cases he wasn't interested in doing it. But it doesn't mean that for everybody.
Now, another story that we want to update because it's toward the end of the show. Michael Rappaport revealed a very disturbing private DM between he and Kevin Durant, where Durant was kind of vulgar and really went after Rappaport because Rappaport criticized Durant the way Durant acted in an interview with Charles Barkley on TBS. Well, Stephen A. Smith has some issues with both sides. And on First Take today, this is what Stephen A. said about Michael Rappaport first.
Let me call out Michael Rappaport. You violated all types of street code. You know the rules. That was a private message from Kevin Durant to yourself. You had no business making it public. I know Michael Rappaport just like you do, just like various others do. I like Michael. He's crazy sometimes on social media, but incredibly hilarious. You all right? Incredibly hilarious. Here's the deal, and I'm cool with him. You know, he knows where I stand. You had no business exposing private, direct messages from Kevin Durant, period.
I'm not sure I agree with Stephen A. Because what if Kevin Durant threatened him on DM? You're supposed to keep it private because it's private?
Oh. Well, he did. A little bit of a leap.
I mean, he did threaten him.
He did threaten him.
But at the same time, Rap wasn't actually scared. He didn't actually feel threatened. So I hear what Stephen A. is saying, that, you know, it wasn't necessary. Listen, it didn't look great. No one looked great.
All right. So saying that, that's perfect lead into this. Stephen A. also had some problems with Kevin Durant.
My question to Kevin Durant is, what's going on? You got something you need to tell us, bro? Something going on? That's really what you're doing? Kevin Durant comes across highly sensitive, very immature. I happen to like Kevin Durant. I think he's a good dude. Even though I don't think that that comes across when he's on social media going off on everybody, I think he's the kind of person whose heart is in the right place and just wants to express himself. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't know better. Kevin Durant is bigger than this. He's better than this. He should be bigger than this. He should be better than this. And that's not something that he should do. And I'm going to throw out the name Rich Kleiman as well. That's his man. That's his right-hand man. You know, you got some influence. Kevin Durant's his own man. Please don't get me wrong. But you got some influence. I mean, say something. Because this kind of stuff does not help.
So the whole Durant thing and the DM thread that Rappaport revealed made me wonder. And I made some phone calls last night. And people high up in the NBA, it'll be interesting to hear this, Peter. They said, this is not the Kevin Durant that played in Oklahoma City. He changed in Golden State. All the criticism that he received leaving the Oklahoma City Thunder, to go to a ready-made championship team, it changed him. He did not like being the villain, and he then turned himself into a villain-type guy. This is a different guy than Oklahoma City, much different. So, you know, be careful what you wish for. So he goes into a great situation in Golden State, and everybody in the world attacked him. You left the situation. You could have knocked off Golden. You almost knocked off Golden State when you were with OKC, and then you join Steph Curry, and they've got championships already. He didn't like that, and this is what has transpired. This is the guy he's become because of all the vitriol from social media, and he's become very, very angry about this stuff. I don't know why he just can't step away from social media.
I mean, listen, I understand it's an uncomfortable spot to be in, and maybe he really never thought of himself as a villain, and so, like you said, he was uncomfortable with it, and it has affected him. You know, like, there are times when, like, doing stuff with WWE, there are times when people will attack me for whatever my opinion is, and I've talked to, like, other people I work with there, and they're like, hey, that's what part of this business is there's good guys and bad guys, and I'm like, yeah, but when you're not intending to be a bad guy, and people just outright hate you and are on you, It you can get sensitive about that. And the only choice you really have is to lean into it and be the bad guy. And I think KD struggles with playing that part because it's not really who he is.
Well, I remember Jason Sehorn said this a long time ago, the former Giant defensive back. and I don't know if he took it from somewhere, but it was the first I heard it, that he said, no matter what you do in this life, no matter how nice a guy you are, no matter how much you donate to charity, the best you can do is get 7 out of every 10 people to like you. You're only going to be able to bat 70%.
Mm-hmm.
So don't go crazy about the other 3. You can't do anything about it. So my advice to Kevin Durant is, man, you own the world. You're on the best team in basketball. You're one of the best players in basketball. Don't worry about the 30%. You can't win them over. Just do what you do. And don't get suckered in. And this is the other part that really bothered me. And I kind of laid out yesterday. I'm a fan of Michael Rappaport. I love his work. But don't get used for exposure for a guy, because that's all that is. All Rappaport is doing is trying to promote himself, and he's using you to do it. So don't allow yourself to get used.
Also, Don and Peter, the response can't be bigger than the initial statement. What Rappaport said, Durant didn't look good in the Charles Barkley exchange. He might have looked good to some of the other big star players, but to the public, it looked like, well, what are you giving Charles Barkley a hard time? He asked you a question, and you give him a one-word answer. The response was so commensurately, like, times 100 than what it warranted. Why would he go off like that over that comment about the interview with Charles Barkley? Now, the interesting part about this, Stephen A. Smith has a warning for both of them. Listen to this.
I can tell you right now, the league is investigating the matter. Security is going to look into it. They're going to go to Byron Spruill, you know, who's the head of operations for the NBA, and him and Commissioner Adam Silver is going to make a decision as to what's going to be handed down by Kevin Durant. What Kevin Durant and everybody needs to remember is this one important thing. Donald Sterling had a private conversation with his, what she called herself, his little rabbit. That's what she said. The point is, that private conversation got him exiled from the NBA. Maybe NBA players should remember that, since even though it was a private conversation, they were the ones pushing Adam Silver to exile him from the NBA. They might want to remember that.
That's a great warning shot by Stephen A. Just because something's DM that is supposed to be private, it's up to the person who receives the DM. I when I first started Twitter, I thought that I could put stuff in DM and it was, you know, it was in the vault. But the person that you're DMing, they can't wait. They can't wait to be the star of the show and make it public. Why would any athlete put something like that into the digital forever land where it could come back and haunt you? What is Kevin thinking? Pick up the phone, call and call Michael Rappaport. Curse him out if you don't like him. Curse him out if you don't like what he said about you and Barkley. You're going to put that stuff in the digital forever world? What's wrong with you?
No, it's silly. You always said it, Michael. And, you know, now you're heeding your own advice, but the advice we always got was, you don't punch down. You know, what are you doing? You're Kevin Durant, for God's sakes. What you do, you're not going to get all 100%. And there's always going to be people that are going to pick on you and dissect everything you do and not like you and hate you and use social media. Just ignore it. It works out for all the guys that do. Right? We bring them up all the time. What would Derek Jeter do, right? You don't think Derek Jeter, as great as he was, didn't get abused sometimes from fans in New York?
I mean, both Charlie and Callie are, you know, always on, you know, their devices now. And I sat down Callie, because she's old enough, I said, don't you dare ever write anything that will come back and haunt you. Don't you think that you can make some cute remark? And this is an 8-year-old, I'm telling.
No, it's important.
And don't think that it's going to come back when you apply for a job in 15 years. It will. And she looked at me. She said, I said, that stuff never goes away.
No.
So what you think you might be saying is a joke to your friend. I mean, there's a woman that lost her job at Teen Vogue because something she wrote as a 17-year-old. Mm. Like, people don't evolve from when they're 17 years old. But this stuff stays forever. It stays forever. And Kevin Durant has to DM Michael Rappaport, that kind of stuff?
I know.
What's he thinking?
Well, right. That's logical. But also, why are you letting it bother you? Really, why would you care what Michael Rappaport has to say? His critique of your comments to Charles Barkley? Like, why would you care? Honestly, why would you care what anybody has to say about anything that you do? You won. Right? One of the best basketball players in the world. Probably going to win a championship this year. Probably win a couple of more championships. He's going to waltz into the Hall of Fame. He's going to have an amazing career when his career finally comes to an end, doing other things, doing talk shows, doing all the things that he does business-wise. Everything he touches turns to gold. One actor DMs him something negative, and he's got to flip out to where he now might get in legitimate trouble with the NBA?
Now, listen, I'm with you guys. You're saying the right things. These are the true things. But this is hard. This is people navigating this world is hard. And Michael, I know, knows this from experience. I certainly do as well. You can be winning at life. You know, I had to delete a response to some guy who tweets. I get one of these every day. So they just at me and write, "You know nothing about sports."
Right.
And I was 1 second from hitting a tweet on something saying, My bank teller thinks I know enough. And then I thought, you don't need to say that. You don't need to be that guy. To who? A guy with 100 followers who I'll never meet, never know, doesn't matter.
Right.
But in the right moment, it can get you, and you feel defensive, and I have to fight against it, being like, what are you worried about?
Listen, we all go through it. Not to Kevin Durant's point, but we all go through it, right? We've all gotten scrutinized. We've all gotten killed unfairly, and we sit there. We've all had that moment at the breakfast table where you're staring at the tweet and thinking of all these great comebacks, all these things that you can humble that person with. And then you think it out and go, yeah, but if I do that, then other people are going to react. That guy's going to get a bunch of attention. And then eventually I may say something that gets misunderstood. Am I going to allow this yo-yo with 100 followers and an egg as an avatar bring me down? And then the answer is no. And then you finish your cereal and you go about your day. I'm no more special than anybody else. So if I can do it, certainly Kevin Durant can do it. You're going to let Michael Rapoport bring you down, make you look bad, have you be a topic of conversation, or do you just go about your business and ignore it? I know it's hard, but you know what's worse? Having to defend something, having to get suspended for something, losing it all because you couldn't control yourself over something somebody else had something to do with. Do you really want Michael Rapoport or Joe Schmo or the Oklahoma City Gazette be what brings you down as a professional athlete?
And you know that it bothers him so much, Don and Peter, that, I mean, he had burner accounts to engage with these people. And I'm going to be totally forthright. The last week or so, the trolls are out. Oh, they're giving away $500 because their ratings are down. They're doing it for ratings. No, we're doing it for Christmas. What do you think? Whenever you give away money, you're doing it for ratings. And our ratings are great, by the way. Whatever you read and whichever way it's spun. But the bottom line is this. I won't answer. I will tell you, I'm tempted. Like Peter, you're tempted to hit send. But I am not going to engage losers. There are winners and there are losers. I am not going to engage losers that are out there trying to get me to engage. And then they win. And
but
then
you
when
hear
you do engage, then you're accused of having thin skin. So you're in a no-win situation.
Win.
So Kevin Durant can defend himself. He should have the ability to defend himself. But he can't. Because if he defends himself, then he's thin-skinned and sensitive. You can't win when you're in the Twitter war. You sit back and you watch it from the seat upstairs. That's it. That's what you have to do. Because you can't win engaging people living in their mother's basement with Cheeto dust on their fingers.
Because the other thing too, Michael, the percentage of the people that come across hating you probably don't hate you that much. They're just trying to drag you into this to get a reaction so they can get their 15 minutes. Why do that for them? Right? So Kevin Durant's going through all this stuff. You know who the winner is? Michael Rapoport. Now he's on everywhere.
Michael Rapoport's a public figure. He's not in his mother's basement with Cheeto dust.
No, he's not.
I mean, those are the people that attack us. Rapoport has every – I mean, he has a podcast. He has a right to have opinions.
Right, but he's also somebody that can use the extra promotion. He's not Kevin Durant. So that's what ends up happening is that Kevin Durant gets used because at the end of the day, it's always the person that's behind you that's going to get the attention, and that's what he's looking for. Well, why did Michael Rapoport have to send that to Kevin Durant? What was the end game? The end game was hoping exactly this would happen.
No, I don't think he sent it. He said that publicly. He said publicly, I don't like what Kevin Durant did. And Kevin Durant got annoyed by it. So Kevin Durant engaged him. I don't think he sent it to Kevin Durant. I think he said it. He's a commentator. That's what he does.
Well, yeah,
he's a provocateur.
Right. But it's not going to die.
Right. Well, it would have died. It would have gone away into the ether if Kevin Durant didn't do this.
But did Kevin really think that he was going to send that to Michael Rapoport and Michael wasn't going to run with it? I mean, logic would tell you that that's somebody that's going to say, this is going to work out for me. I'm going to run with it. So why would Kevin need that?
I don't know. I don't know why Kevin Durant has burner accounts. I don't know why he engages fans on Twitter. You have every right to do it. But again, you're going to be the one that looks bad. You're going to do something that makes you look bad. And that what Stephen A. Smith said, that the NBA is investigating this because some of that stuff was really vile and antagonistic and wouldn't be allowed to be said in the public forum. But Michael turned a DM into a public forum, which is, I guess it's his right, whether it's against the code or whatever, it's his right. I mean, just because it's a DM doesn't mean it stays a DM forever. That's the risk you take.
Yeah,
I learned it.
Yeah.
I learned it like 8 years ago. Kevin Durant should know it. Just because you DM somebody doesn't mean it's private forever. Doesn't stay in the vault. All right, drop madness time. What are the matchups today, Petey?
There you go. After a controversial day of drop madness yesterday, we're back at it again on the K Show. It's brought to you by Wendy's. Where quality is our recipe. Wendy's, we got you. By the way, the other day when I was driving, guys, I did have some more Wendy's. Delightful. I went with the regular. Well, I didn't go back to the jalapeno popper sandwich. I just went with the traditional, the crispy chicken sandwich, I believe.
Couldn't have been happier, right?
My God. Oh, this is the Frosty Chino! It was delightful. And Barrett had a rough day, so I was just eating my fries, and I would eat one, and I would just hold one back up over my shoulder, and he would jump up and take it. We had a great, great time. It's delicious. Guys, we'll start in the K region with the number 2 seed.
But I'm a bad teammate. Both of you take a walk. We'll be back. No music out.
Up against the 3 seed.
You're an idiot. Your sister smells, and she's ugly.
Wow.
This is a no-brainer to me. No music.
I know how you're feeling there. Let's go to the Peter region where you have the 2 seed, Tom Thibodeau Diaw, up against the 6 seed.
Did you hear what Rosenberg said?
That's tough. I actually feel that with your logic, I'm for the 6 seed, the high voice.
Okay. I voted for 2.
But that goes against your theory because the 2 was not a mistake. That was a contrived joke.
True, but I kind of enjoyed it.
You just enjoyed it. You enjoyed it.
It was very. I thought it was very creative.
Thibodeau Diaw.
It's like a great actor trying to act bad.
Can't do
right.
it.
Can't do it.
Duh.
But you did
Duh.
It.
Thank you. I think. Let's go to the Don region with the 6 seed.
So that's my list today, on Cinco de Mayo, the 5th of February.
Up against a feisty 15.
God, I had a soft salami over at Katz. To die for.
This is going to be like UCLA. I think that's going. It's what I voted for.
You think the 15's going?
I think the 15 is going.
Big day in the Nether region. My favorite, the 2 seed.
Let your wings fly. Let you fly.
Up against the 3 seed.
Don't scream at me on the show.
Don't defend them. I just need everyone to remember when they're voting today. That's not the real Andrew screaming drop. That is the 1 seed. Let's all remember. Can you play the 1 seed?
I said already, Don, it was embarrassing.
Just so you know, that's also alive and well. Everyone needs to know all these things.
Well,
go vote TMKS ESPN on Twitter. Guys, almost 5,000 votes yesterday in the battle between Stench from Mamaroneck and Sniff 'em Dead. And it looks like the vote was decided by 3 votes out of those 5,000.
I still don't accept the result. I'm sorry. It has tainted this tournament forever for me.
Well, guess what? You're going to lose your Twitter account, and then you'll have to release statements from your office whenever you want to talk about this.
And I want soft salami to win as badly as I wish I had a soft salami right in front of me.
Oh, it's delicious. I'm a salami.
Don't you really? Cats? Are you kidding me?
Don't you? 1-800-919-3776.
Absolutely not.
We are going to get into the Lindor situation, which still hovers over the Mets as they prepare to open their season tomorrow against the Nationals. 5:30, we're going to talk to Gary Cohen, the great Gary Cohen. I think he's in E.J. Raddick territory, right? The great?
Why not? Yeah.
He deserves it.
He's going to the Hall.
Oh, he's unbelievable how good he is. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Michael Kay Show.
Here's Jeff Passan. He was on with KJZ today, and Jeff talked about Lindor asking for more than the Mets offer.
Francisco Lindor does not have the numbers to back up a contract for 50 or 60 or however many million more he wants than 325. And if this is a negotiating ploy by him, boy, he is playing a risky game right now.
That's how I feel. I'm not going to knock the guy. You can ask for whatever you want. Doesn't make him a bad guy. Doesn't make his agent a bad guy. You're supposed to get every dollar that you can, but it doesn't make sense. The juice isn't worth the squeeze.
Yeah,
it's just not. So many things can go wrong. There's a history of things that have gone wrong. And Ken Davidoff brought up a great point in the paper today. If you look at this, he's asking for money that he should get if he was a free agent. The Mets are giving him this money before he's a free agent.
The Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Well, opening day is tomorrow. We are ready. Mets against the Nationals, national TV, ESPN, Yankees against the Blue Jays at the stadium. And Yes's coverage will begin at 11:30 tomorrow. We'll have all the ceremonies, and Bob and Jack and John, they're ready with the pregame. Then the game will be me, David Cohn, Paul O'Neill, and Meredith. So we're all pumped up. The Yankees catch a little bit of a break. George Springer will start the season on the IL. Nobody roots for an injury, but he had an oblique situation. He's on the IL. Now, that's important because six of the Yankees' first 12 games are going to be against the Toronto Blue Jays. And now the Blue Jays, in those six games, might not have a guy who is supposed to be the anchor of the team and their big free agent expenditure. Now, you look at the Mets. The Mets start against the Nationals tomorrow. And then look at their schedule, Don. By April 15th, which used to be tax day, it's been extended this year into May. But by April 15th, they would have played 13 games already against a National League East opponents. 13 games. Three against the Washington Nationals, then three in Philly against the Phillies. Then they open up the season against Miami at home on the 8th. So they'll have three against the Marlins and then four against the Phillies. You're going to get a pretty good idea, and that's why I'm a little worried about the injuries they have going in. No Carrasco is a big deal.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to know a lot. We're going to know a lot by the 15th. Now, not many seasons are won and lost by April 15th. But when you have your first 13 games against division opponents, it's going to be interesting to see exactly where they stand, because you can count on DeGrom. You're hoping that Stroman is the pitcher that they thought he was going to be. Taijuan Walker. And then you've got injuries. Carrasco's out. Then you got Peterson. And then you've got probably an opener, and then Lucchese. So the one sure thing to me is DeGrom. I don't look at Stroman as a sure thing. I think he's ultimately fantastically talented, but he's going to harness that and be a legitimate number two starter. These are big questions for the Mets, Don.
That's what he has to be to start the season until Syndergaard comes back, and Syndergaard's probably not going to come back until June, maybe July. All right, Carrasco could be a guy that could take that, but right now he's on the shelf. And, you know, when I prognosticated this whole thing, Michael, I'm thinking, you know, the Braves, Nationals, Phillies are pretty good. Marlins are better than they've used to be. They made the playoffs last year under that different format. I'm with you that bad Aprils don't usually bury good teams, but when you're in that kind of a division where I might be end up being wrong about this, I think the Padres are locking up one of the wild cards. So you've got four teams battling for two spots, because I don't know if anything's going to come out of the Central. So it'll be the winner of the division and then maybe just one wild card out of the other three teams. And if you get off to a slow start, especially against these teams, is that going to put you in a situation where you're chasing your tail the whole year? And this has always been a team, outside of a couple of years ago when they got off to that amazing, well, they were like 12-2 or whatever. You know, a team that starts slowly and then they have these amazing second halves that never amount to anything, Michael, because they dug themselves too big a hole.
And we know that they'll win opening day because they have the best opening day record of any team, I think, in the world.
And from what I'm seeing, Michael, is that there's a positive test with the Nationals with four players that were in contact with him. So what exactly are the Nationals going to look like in this series? So you might be in a situation where you kind of have to get these games, take advantage of it. And that's going to be an X factor all year long, everybody, because we've seen it in the NBA and the NHL. For those people that are only baseball fans, COVID-19's not over. The vaccinations have not been through Major League Baseball yet. So you're going to get ready for a baseball game, and guess what? You're going to find out the game's not going to get played because two players came in contact with somebody or they've got a contact trace or there's been a false positive. Brad Marchand of the Boston Bruins missed two games, Michael, because of a false positive.
Mm-hmm.
Soto, how much time did he miss last year, Peter, because of a false positive?
He claims it was a false positive.
But he claims
it was seven tests, six tests? It was back and forth over and over again.
He claims, but you're going to get a lot of that because it's not over. We're really outside of people getting vaccinated, and I think we will start to see players get vaccinated in the states that have reduced the number. And I guess there could be some how many Mets and Yankees are over 30 that can go and get vaccinations right now.
But and there are some teams that play in cities that, I mean, the Cardinals are 85% vaccinated already. And the Houston Astros, they opened the season on the West Coast. They stopped over in Houston yesterday, I think, and they got vaccinated as well. So the teams that get vaccinated, they're going to be in better shape than the teams that are risking things and are in situations where they can't get vaccinated because it's not their time yet.
But not right away. Right? I mean, there's a difference between starting the vaccination and be fully vaccinated.
Right.
Michael, you're an example. You just had your last shot on Saturday.
Right.
You're not fully vaccinated yet. I mean, technically, you've gotten your two shots, but it'll take a few weeks before it fully kicks in.
Unless they get the Johnson & Johnson, so it wouldn't be as long a stretch.
Right, but it's still, if anybody got vaccinated over the last couple of weeks, you know, the first week of the season, they could still be compromised. And not every team is going to have the luxury of being able to get vaccinated right away. My point is that we are going to see, like we saw last year, postponements. Or teams having to play shorthanded. We saw it in football. So what's going to be the football version of the Denver Broncos this year? Where a team is going to get a chance to play, but their best players can't play that weekend. And you get to take advantage of that. Or it happens to the Mets and Yankees too. So we think we got it all figured out here, which you never do with baseball. But COVID's going to have a say.
This portion of the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, Westfield World Trade Center. Now, there'll be 10,850 people at Yankee Stadium tomorrow, 20% capacity. And I hope people really know the rules because I didn't. I got to tell you guys the story. I'm texting with a friend of mine. Who runs a suite, who actually buys a suite at Yankee Stadium and you know, leases out seats to people and companies that are interested in going. So he had just gotten his second vaccine on Saturday. And I said, how do you feel? And he told me he felt okay. And he said, I got to get tested before opening day. And I said, why? You got the second vaccine. I said, if you have proof of the second vaccine, you're good to go, which I thought I was good to go. He goes, no. He said, you have to have your second vaccine and 14 days after, then you're good to go. But until that point, every time you go to a game, you have to present proof of a negative test. So I had to get the test today, and thankfully it came back negative. So if you're going to the game, just because you had that second vaccine, it has to be 14 days since that second vaccine in order to just be clear sailing. Otherwise, you are going to have to present a test.
Yeah. And I thought about you, Michael. During one of the breaks, I ran upstairs, and Nancy said she saw this story that said, do not laminate your vaccine card.
Really?
Because people want to do that because they're going to be using it a lot. And they said, don't do that because that vaccine card might be used for booster shots down the road.
Yeah, because
we don't know how long the
vaccine
is going to last.
Well, they also said,
wait. So, I,
real quick. So what would be wrong with that? Oh, they'd want to update the date?
Right. Yeah, so you could update the, like, update, you bring the card in, they give you a booster shot, say whatever, this is, you know, down the road, and then they could put it right there on the card. They may not be able to give you a new one, you know, so don't laminate it.
Right. So, but the problem is if you carry it around with you, it's going to get destroyed. So they do give you the option. You could take a picture of it on your phone, and you could show the picture.
Right.
Rather than carry around the card. So that's like laminating it in the digital world.
But there might be a point, like, because we're wondering how often are we going to get vaccinated? Maybe there's going to be more vaccinations 2-3 years from now, or a booster shot, that they'll use that card. So just don't laminate it. Take a picture of it. So that way you don't lose it, but make sure whatever card you have, you don't laminate it.
Don't make it like Michael's list. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought it up because I'm considering moving the laminated list into a digital age simply because I continue to laminate and then have to open up the lamination and then re-laminate because I add names all the time. So maybe I'll just take pictures or add it in the notes part of the iPhone because I don't know if I can continue to afford the constant relamination.
Now, have you ever taken anybody off the list?
No, nobody gets off the list. because the title of the list is Sorry Doesn't Fix the Lamp. So, if you're on the list and then you say you're sorry, what does that mean? You still did what you did.
Yeah, but if somebody on that list were to save your life, that wouldn't be enough to get them off the list?
Like, go out of their way to save my life? Like, risk their life?
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, we don't know who's on this list, but just, I've got some guesses. But
yeah, you have some. You got to.
But if that person were to be walk, you know, just within, you know, 6 feet of you at Yankee Stadium or something, and then somebody was to, a shot was fired, and that person dove in front of you and took that bullet, now, you're taking them off the list, Michael. You have to.
I don't know.
Yeah, come on.
We want to send out congratulations to a guy that actually got me and Don into a game that we'll never forget that made Don cry. Ryan Rucco's dad, the NFL senior VP, Peter Rucco, joined the NFL Management Council in 1986. He is retiring, according to Adam Schefter. Rucco was a founding father of the salary cap and free agency and a key figure in CBA negotiations and labor relations. He worked with 297 head coaches and 194 GMs. He is considered a legend in the NFL. And forget about all of his professional accomplishments. He's a really terrific person who treats people very well. Obviously raised his children very well with his wife, who's a doll as well. So congratulations to Peter Rucco, who has decided to retire, according to Adam Schefter.
Tremendous.
But a really good guy.
Got to know him a lot. You know where I got to see him a lot? Is when I had those the partial season tickets to the Mets.
Right.
The whole Rucco family would go to see Joe Panik play. When he was with the Giants. So, of course, I would take Nancy, and I would see Mr. Rucco, and he was such a great guy. I'm glad he's retiring. Enjoy life, and you know he will.
Because
the other thing that that job came with was tons of money. So he is going to really be able
He'll
to.
He'll be fine.
And Ryan and his wife are having a baby in August, so I'm sure, you know, Peter wants to be a big part of that, and without working, you could be a bigger part.
Yeah, because what I hear from grandkids, Michael, we won't have these, is that it's all the joys of being a father, Peter, but you get the kid that gives back. You know, you get to give them back, so you don't.
When they get annoying, you give them back.
as soon as it gets over the top, it's like, okay, come get them.
But it's the only relationship where the affection for the child is literally as strong as the affection for your own child.
Yes.
So, like for example, I'm an uncle and I love my niece and nephew. I recognize it's not the same as having your own children or your own grandchildren. But when you, my parents with grandchildren, my pictures are gone. I'm a relic. I don't exist in my parents' house anymore.
That's sad.
The grandchildren, Alex and Jess, are the only ones who even exist. So that is true. So congratulations to Mr. Rucco. That's fantastic.
Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Lewis in the Bronx. Lewis.
Oh, I got to turn that radio down.
No, buddy. You got to hang up then. I'm sorry. Hello? That's the way this works. It's unbelievable. He's just, people are unbelievable.
Hello?
Do not keep the phone, do not keep the radio on when you're on the phone.
And I know how it works. The last thing they heard, the last voice they heard before they were put on hold was Andrew saying, turn your radio down. Don't you listen.
Come on.
Let's go to, you know what? Let's make the proceedings a little more humorous. What do you say? Here he is.
Hold on. Hold
on. Here he is.
Hold on.
John Tush.
That's the last one. It's always the last one.
How are you?
Good.
Good. Hey, you might get a little mad at me, and I hope you let me finish. You know, this umpire may not have been, and I'm not a baseball fan, so I don't know, but this umpire may not have made the grade. But the problem is, and I think Peter will agree with me here, is there's not enough opportunity. The other day, you guys made the statement that not everything has color involved in it. The problem is, because there's systemic racism, everything in our society, whether it be sports or business or anything, has color involved in it. And black and brown people are not given the same opportunities. So maybe the comment from this umpire came out of that. What do you think?
No, he's a terrible umpire, John. I can't add any nuance or color to this. And this isn't Michael Kay talking. Players think he's terrible. Managers think he's awful.
But here's what he's
behind the plate. They know that something bad is going to. And he's had plenty of opportunities. He's been an umpire for over 20 years.
And that wasn't even his lawsuit. It was all about him.
Right.
Did he get together with the union, with the umpires, and say, there's a systemic racism going on, they're not giving us opportunities? No, it was about him and his situation.
But he did say he did point a finger at racism, right?
Who?
Angel.
He said he did not get World Series assignments because of his heritage.
So, to Mr. Tush's point, while in this case he's not deserving, he stinks, everyone thinks he stinks, he wouldn't even be able to make the argument if they'd done a better job being diverse previously and there were other umpires you could point to. See what I'm saying? So it does, on some level, while in his case, he's trying to take advantage of the fact that he can point to that when he's just not a good umpire. But if you do a better job being diverse in the first place, there's no argument to be made because they go, well, what are you talking about? We had two Hispanic umpires last year.
But there are Hispanic umpires, and Hispanic umpires have been promoted to work the World Series, so that's what killed his case. Even the judge said that.
Yeah, so they've already
diversity in umpiring. There is. I mean, you can't force people to become an umpire, but there are black umpires, there are Latin American umpires, there are.
Well, then I will shut up and turn the other way now.
Good, that's a good choice by you. Let's go to John and Chatham. John,
hey guys, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I got a Gonzaga point. And a question about the Nets.
Okay.
Gonzaga, what a three-year epic run they're on. In 2019, I think they were 33-4, went to the Elite Eight. Last year, I think 31-2, favorite to win it all, but we know what the virus did. And this year, undefeated. I mean,
well, you're leaving out the 2 years before that, too, John. In 16 and 17, they were 37-2. In 17 and 18, they were 32-5. They've been unbelievable.
But time to win, right?
If this was ever Kentucky, North Carolina, or God forbid Duke, it would be more. This is all we'd be hearing. It'd be more annoying than the.
No, but they got to still win, John.
With Lily.
But they got to win.
Right.
It's time to win. I agree with you. It's a great story. They went from look at Gonzaga as the 12 seed making a run to where now they've become a consistently great team. Now you got to win, because it's great that you've been really close, but if you're undefeated, Michael, and they get beat by UCLA, it's a great run they're on, but eventually you got to win, because when Duke and Kentucky and North Carolina go on these runs, they win. They're not the underdog anymore. It's a great story, but at what point do you have to win?
But sometimes small schools like that and the giants that they're going up against, I mean, Butler making the title game 2 years in a row is almost as big a deal as winning. Gonzaga, little Gonzaga, who is no longer considered, but they are a mid-major. They're not a major. Doing what they've done, being a number one seed three of the last 5 years, and then last year they would have been as well if there was an NCAA tournament. So I think that what they've done, they don't have the same resources as Duke or North Carolina or the big schools. For what he has done there, it's extraordinary. It really is. So, you want to win the championship, but I don't think it takes anything away from them.
Yeah, but I if they lose this year, I think it does. I mean, you're undefeated.
I mean, this would put them in a stratosphere where they could never be doubted again because they'd be the first undefeated champion since Bobby Knight's team in 1976. So.
Yeah, that's a long time ago. So, no, I'm with you. But, you know, at what point do you stop becoming the little engine that could? Now it's time to win because they've proven that they can do it. And now you're undefeated. Your first game of the Final Four is against an 11 seed. So I think the great punctuation to this story is to win the national championship, and I think it has to happen now.
This is the year it's most likely to happen. Gary Cohen is one of the best at what he does. He is the longtime entire history of SNY, television play-by-play voice of the Mets, and then before that on the radio. So Gary's going to join us. We'll talk some Mets with him when we get back right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.